Hey everybody, Merry Christmas. Welcome to another episode of Warriors HQ. Logan Murdoch to my left, Mark Medina to my right.
Merry Christmas.
Dieter Kurtenbach. Wow. Let's just start with this question. What the hell was that?
Lakers excellence.
Mark Medina's obligatory Lakers standing. Logan Murdoch, longtime Golden State Warriors fan. What make it you?
That was probably the worst game I've seen from the Warriors since I started covering this team.
Yeah, I had to be facetious there just to get you riled up, Dieter. It was a few things. Yeah, the Lakers were playing well, and you give them credit, blah, blah, blah. But to Logan's
blah,
point.
Blah, blah, blah.
Logan's point.
Win.
Yeah. Logan's point, a 127-101 loss. There's becoming a trend here. In big games, the Warriors are getting blown out. They got blown out against Toronto a few weeks ago. They got blown out against OKC. They got blown out against Milwaukee.
Yeah.
They got blown out against Houston now. Some of those games, you give them a little bit of a pass that there's no Steph and no Draymond. But these last two marquee games, Toronto, Lakers, even when you account for the fact that both teams played really well and executed, the Warriors had a full squad and it wasn't enough. And I don't even know if it's just, they weren't up for it for some godforsaken reason, like, which is head-scratching. They didn't adjust well.
Factual. Well, yeah. they adjusted well when LeBron James left the game in the third quarter when he felt something pop.
But not well enough to close it out.
No, clearly. They could not handle the counterpunch of the Los Angeles Lakers. This is the fourth 20-point loss at home for the Warriors this year. And three of those games I want to highlight because it's Toronto, it's Milwaukee, and now it is the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, and the Thunder as well.
The Thunder, yeah. The Thunder one felt a little finicky, but those other three – those are, as you put it, full squad. Those are teams that – let's throw the Thunder into it. These are four teams that are contenders. These are four of the better teams in the National Basketball Association. The Warriors are supposed to be the class of the National Basketball Association, and they're getting run off their home court more often than they're winning.
Yeah. So far it's two full squad.
Okay, I mean, still.
But it's still the same.
Still.
Point. Yeah.
I mean, and some of these losses are just – they're egregious. I mean, this was an egregious loss. Do you feel like it's a referendum, Logan?
Definitely. This is something that – we said this in our three things, that it was the chickens coming home to roost, right? I mean,
sure.
It's a game where, you know, the opposing team comes out early, they make their run, and then when they get a counterpunch, they just fold. And it's weird how that happens because – LeBron goes down, you fully expect him to make a run. And
they did.
And they did. And then they get it to within two. Kyle Kuzma goes to the free throw line. It's all over. And then Rondo just turns into 2009 Rondo.
Rondo was insane.
And Rondo was insane tonight. And I just think that this is a referendum of what they've been doing. They have been lackadaisical on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. They've been thinking that their talent is just going to win out of nowhere. And it's just this is one of the games that – you know, it's the chickens coming home to roost.
Yeah, to hammer Logan's point home, the four All-Stars and Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, they shot a combined 14 of 44 from the field. And they also had, of the 13 turnovers, Draymond had four of them, but collectively, they had the majority of them, eight. I know that when you talk to players post-game watching the game, the obvious emphasis defensively is mainly on the three All-Stars with Steph, Klay, and Durant. So Maybe one of them has an off night. But you think at some point you can go to one of them to make up for it. They weren't able to do that. They weren't able, aside from Andre Iguodala, who was the lone bright spot with 23 points, they weren't able to get anyone else to be a kind of a decoy hitting open shots when those guys were covered. And so I think that may explain Steph, Klay, KD
dude,
at some point.
But
Draymond has to take advantage of that. He's giving wide open shots, and okay, he's missing them, but
he's not
Draymond's, playmaking.
Draymond's right. A bad shooter, and he has been a bad shooter for over a year now. Like, you do not expect Draymond Green to knock down even a third of his three-point attempts.
But
he needs to do that to keep the offense open. We are not just going to brush over, Klay. That might explain Klay. Nothing explains Klay Thompson scoring 5 points and being in this big of a rut right now.
Right.
He's shooting 31% outside of that game from Chicago from beyond the arc. This is Klay Thompson. What's going on here is not normal with him, and I don't think anyone can explain it, least of all Klay.
I can't explain it. I just know that Klay was pissed after this game tonight.
Yeah, well, he does not like – Klay does not like criticism, if we're just being totally honest here. And that's fine. That's his prerogative. No one likes criticism. He just doesn't hear it as much. And
you suck.
I mean, yeah, but like Mark Medina, living Twitter troll. Ethan Strauss of The Athletic goes up to Clay. He was the first guy. He goes during I think it was either Draymond or Andre was up. Mind you, not a lot of guys came to the podium tonight. Goes up during a different scrum that had most of the people in there. And he asks Clay, like, how do you feel your shooting? He goes, I'm fine. It's like, how do you feel the rest of your game is? It's all good. It's like, how do you feel the team is playing right now? He's like, man, it's a long season. That was Clay's press conference today. This is a guy who scored 5 points. 2 for 7 from the field, 1 for 3 from three. Again, 31% taking that Chicago game out. 33% leaving the Chicago game in. That's 14 made threes in one game. He hasn't made 14 made threes, like, all month. Total. If the Warriors do not have Klay Thompson at least operating to a semi-normal capacity, they cannot be the Warriors, quote-unquote.
Here's the thing, though. The fact is, two of the All-Stars have not been playing well this season. And let's be frank, this is a roster constructed with top-heavy players.
Boom.
And if two of the All-Stars aren't playing up to par, then this is not a good team.
Alfonso McKinney's not coming in and dropping 25.
As much as you would want him to.
Yeah, like Alfonso McKinney's a nice, you know, energy guy to come in and help out. Like, when you blow a game where Andre Iguodala scores 23 points, there has to be some sort of a referendum here. Listen, Draymond and Clay put in arguably their worst games of the season and arguably the biggest game of the season. We can't brush that aside. Mark, you wanted to go on a little bit more about Draymond here.
Yeah, so the point I was making earlier was you can understand to a degree if the three All-Stars are getting double-teamed, that contributes to the struggles. Where Draymond's a little bit less tolerable is he's being given open looks. He at first tried those. It didn't go in. They continue to do that, and he was very hesitant on making plays. He seemed to be a really good playmaker at the beginning of the game, and then he just kind of became passive. But with Clay, okay, the Warriors are talking about, hey, he needs to get more than 7 field goal attempts. Maybe that's fair from a number standpoint. But the Warriors have actively looked like they're trying to get Clay going, and he's getting a lot of open looks. So
yeah.
Earlier in the season, when we're looking at the total reasons why he's inefficient, okay, you can put in Steph and Draymond being out, he's not getting as many open looks, he's taking more mid-range this season as opposed to 3 points, yada, yada, yada. Sometimes there's been games he's forcing it, but these last few games, I see everything perfectly aligned for him to make them, and he's not making them. Like, I think it's on him.
Well, now he's forcing shots on top of that, if we're being honest. He's taken a lot of mid-range shots, which he had to do for a stretch there when Steph was out. He had to take on more of a burden of the offense. But now he's not even the fulcrum of the second unit, and he's still forcing mid-range shots. I mean, it's funny. When the Warriors obviously have this big existential thing that they deal with, when they have, obviously, Kevin Durant's ruthlessness and just rote force, and then you have this Steph joy, right, where everybody's involved. You can give the ball to Durant on one possession, he'll take care of everything on his own, or you can let Steph sort of be the maestro of the orchestra. But Clay has not gotten on track this year. And let's not forget, before that game in Chicago, he was in a big funk too. He's been right for one game the entire season.
Yeah, the preseason he was bad for most of the preseason.
It's right. Yeah. So it's one of those things where it's like maybe they just need to – and I said this in last year's playoffs. Like, if you can't figure out if you want to be a Steph-led team or a Durant-led team, go to the third option. Just get everything going through Clay, because he seems to be the bridge between the two worlds. And for the life of me, the coaching isn't there. I think that they actually tried to do it today. I think I agree with your point there, Mark, that they were trying to get Clay open looks today, and he was getting open looks. But they're not falling. He's in his head. He's got to be in his head. Maybe he needs a few days off or something.
Who knows? I mean, they're not going to say that publicly, and I doubt they're going to say, you know what, Clay, let's sit you tonight, because
Or maybe Clay just pulls it where he just misses practice and goes for 61 points.
That seemed
to work back in the day.
Have a shoot around on Thursday.
Yeah, maybe we do one of those again, because it seems to me like Clay is supposed to be the unflappable one, the one who doesn't get too high, definitely never gets too low. I haven't seen him in that kind of a mood in a while. And, yeah. And clearly the play is poor. Let's go on to something else here, because we can only belabor a point that we have literally no answers to at this juncture. Damian Jones obviously has had an up and down season. Now he's out for the season. And so that means Kevon Looney is the main center. And that means, and listen, as the local Kevon Looney stan, I'm all for it. More Kevon Looney minutes. But that means also Draymond's getting a lot of minutes at center, and that's a taxing thing, which could be leading, and to a certain extent, to some of those shooting problems. It's exhausting playing center all the time. But you got this kid Zubac, who was on the end of the bench for the Lakers all year. And
okay,
was in the G League.
Do I need
last
to do my plug here?
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, this is a guy who they wanted. They played Kyle Kuzma at center for the beginning of the season instead of playing this kid, and he went out there
and balled.
He was wrecking dudes. He looked like friggin' Joel Embiid.
He looked like the Gasol's
now,
brother.
Now, to provide a backstory.
He looked like Marc Gasol that season that he lost 35 pounds and was just wrecking dudes.
So I covered his rookie year, and he showed signs of this. The thing that held him back was his conditioning. He had a little bit of a weight issue. But just looking from afar, him not playing a lot last year had more to do with them not using him well. Like, he should have gotten minutes.
What was their excuse at the beginning of this year when they had one center and played Kyle Kuzma?
It was honestly the reasons I don't even know what they are. They're stupid. He should have been playing.
He looked like a baller.
Zubac is a good player. The thing that held him back earlier in his career was he was slow getting up and down the floor. He had a good, like, fundamentally sound game. Like, he has the base of being a good post player, a little bit of a mid-range, but his conditioning was bad. And then he sometimes played later on in his rookie season, and then they wound up sitting Timofey Mozgov for reasons of wanting to get a pick and because he's actually kind of playing well. So I can't explain why he didn't play last year. It was a dumb decision.
Well, clearly, because he absolutely wrecked. And more to the point, like, Zubac is going off. Listen, as much as maybe he should play, as much potential as we've seen, like, this guy ain't an all-star. This is not a guy who you write up a game plan, and it's like, whatever you do, don't let Zubac get off.
You're right.
But Kevon Looney was no real threat to him. Draymond Green was getting pushed around by him in the low post. You couldn't do the super switch stuff because Lord knows anybody besides those two was getting pushed around. Jordan Bell came in. That was a hopeless experiment. This team might actually need to go. I know the NBA gets smaller and smaller and smaller every year to the point where Kyle Kuzma can play center in the NBA for long periods of time and get away with it. But, like, we don't know when DeMarcus Cousins is coming back. Draymond, it's not good for Draymond to play this much center, which is why Steve Kerr said he didn't want to do it at all this year, and now he's doing it for like 25 minutes a game. The Warriors and Bob Myers might need to go figure out a way to get themselves a legitimate 7-footer with some heft to them, because they got pushed around in the low post today.
Yeah, you made a great point. I think I don't want to say the Warriors are suddenly adjusting their timetable, because they've always been stressing, hey, let's be patient with DeMarcus. It's a serious injury. But I think,
I mean, is DeMarcus going to do it? Is 75% DeMarcus Cousins going to be able to stop Zubac?
But what I was saying here is, entering the season, it was seen as if DeMarcus is a luxury, not a necessity.
Oh, he's a necessity now.
He's
baby.
A necessity now.
I think I don't know if people want to hear this, but we said this also in the three things. It just shows how much, I mean, while they weren't the best, how valuable Zaza Pachulia or JaVale McGee
absolutely
was last year. I mean,
yeah,
like, while, you know, they had their we all know that they had their deficiencies.
They had plenty of deficiencies.
But they were both 7 feet tall, and they both could take up space, and they were both competent.
Zaza would punch a dude in the chest if you needed him to.
Yes.
And, like, I'm not, you know, advocating violence here, but, like, in the metaphorical sense, someone needed to check Zubac at some point. I don't think you need to go full Bill Laimbeer and get the elbows up, but, like, let him feel you a little bit.
Yeah.
And they did. I mean, Draymond's trying his best out there. He's got a bum shoulder, a bad foot. He's so far into his own head on 1,000 different things because he's playing like crap. He's got an 18% turnover ratio this year. 18%. So he's not exactly thinking about, how do I stop this guy who was in the G League last year? Let me make sure that's my sole focus here. I don't know. Robin Lopez is a name that's been floating around the NBA circles as a guy that the Bulls might buy out, or that maybe could fetch a second-round pick off of somebody. And if I'm Bob Myers, I am calling up Gar Foreman and John Paxton tonight and saying, name your price. We got to figure something out. We got to figure something here, because DeMarcus Cousins is absolutely a necessity, as you pointed out. But if you are relying on DeMarcus Cousins, who we do not know if he will be good or not, he came off of an injury that would have ended careers 15 years ago. A guy, we have no example of a center ever being good after this injury. If you're relying on that guy, you are setting yourself up to be disappointed. I'm not saying that that will be the case, but you're setting yourself up for that possibility.
Yeah, and you know, we're looking at the Lakers lineup right now. Tyson Chandler would have been a great addition.
Absolutely.
I know he told reporters that the Warriors were interested in him.
I bet they were.
And I think where Tyson, he was weighing things is
he
kind
grew
of
up in L.A. He wanted to go back to the Lakers.
Sure, but that's one. But also to your point about relying on DeMarcus, and I don't fault this for the Warriors. It's just the reality that he was under the impression with talking with the Warriors that, hey, like once DeMarcus comes back, like we don't know what your role is going to be. It's going to be off the bench, and we'll see what happens. And so I think just to really kind of bolster what you were saying, like everything at the beginning of the season was constructed of top heavy, we'll invest in the young guys, we'll go through those ups and downs as it happens, but everything kind of smacked their face at once where, you know, Draymond and Steph come out, all of a sudden they really have to rely on these young guys and they're not, you know, ready for that necessarily.
Right.
Nothing against them, they just aren't. And then all of a sudden that's just been piling over ever since.
Logan, are we overreacting here? Is this just another example of, oh, the Warriors don't really care, and so anything that happens is sort of empty, and this is all just unnecessary hand-wringing?
I don't think so. I think they have legit problems. I mean, Klay Thompson is not scoring. They have a center issue. This is something that is legit, you know what I mean? And I think that, you know, we probably could have been overreacting maybe a month ago.
For sure.
But now, no, there's legit problems here. Klay Thompson needs to play better. Draymond Green needs to play better. If they don't play better, there's literally no one else that can do that. They don't have a great bench. They are a top-heavy team. So I do believe that this is something that they need to figure out.
Yeah.
Something I bring up all the time is, I mean, Andre Iguodala had a big game tonight, which only bolsters my argument that he gets up for five games a year, because we all had this one circled on the calendar, and it's like, well, everyone's like, oh, Andre's washed up. And I'm like, no, he's just biding his time. He's just picking his spots. Well, he picked a spot tonight. He goes for 23. He was outstanding in this game, and he's been outstanding shooting threes, if we're being honest, over the last few. But Sean Livingston, he's not the Sean Livingston that we've come to know and expect. He's still a solid player. I'm not saying that he shouldn't be out there or anything, but he's just not giving you as much quality as you thought, particularly on the defensive end. Also, this Warriors team seems to have a significant amount of foul troubles. And when you're a top-heavy team with foul troubles and two guys in a funk and no centers and your best reserve is a guy who plays hard 10 games a year, I don't know why I would expect you to be number one in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I totally agree. You have 21 fouls. You have Draymond fouling out.
You have Steph.
Yeah, Draymond fouling out with 5 minutes left.
Right. And
need to go to those summer league rules.
I'm looking at these numbers here, and you always wonder, okay, a shot here, a shot there. Like, maybe Jonas and Alfonso make one extra shot, whatever. Maybe
so they lose by 18.
Right. But I'm just adding these up, right?
Right.
Maybe Clay, Steph, Kevin hit a few extra shots. But the problem with that logic is that doesn't necessarily change, like, the foundation of things. Like, they are a few shots away from having a different result, but doesn't necessarily change the issues that haven't been corrected. So,
right. Yeah, you can't complain about the bench not pulling its weight when Clay Thompson's scoring 5 points on Christmas Day.
Right. And
when Draymond Green has an 18% turnover rate.
And I think, you know, it is hard to gauge as far as how to react properly because they have four All-Stars. But here's where I think it might be even more troublesome than normal, where I don't think the right narrative is that the Warriors are bored and they're just going through the motions, maybe when they were down by double digits. But I think a lot of it's executional things, and I don't think it's
isn't that part of going through the motions though?
Well, I think the point I was about to make here is I don't think it's a coincidence that both Durant and Steph were saying after the game you know, how they have this inability so far this season to make adjustments. And I think that was basically a reference to maybe teams aren't near at the same level talent-wise that they are at yet, but as their dominance has gone on, more and more teams have schemed to try to minimize the talent they have, and they haven't responded to those counters correctly.
Well, that's certainly no doubt. I mean, and it is interesting. We were talking about on the three things video, the counterpunch. I mean, when was the last time you remember the Warriors counterpunching a counterpunch? I mean, it hasn't happened. They've tried to lay hay. They'll give you 5, 10 minutes.
The only game I think was the Milwaukee game in Milwaukee.
That was a nice slugfest. Yeah. And here's the thing: after that game, everyone shut the hell up, as they should have. I mean, we were in pretty good panic mode, considering all things going into that game. Hadn't they just lost to the Pistons?
Yeah, they lost to the Pistons. Yeah. They beat Atlanta, but Atlanta's not good.
Man.
They beat Cleveland.
Right. So they needed to make – that was a bit of a referendum game in and of itself. You're going to Milwaukee, a team that ran you off the court with Giannis, a team that, again, is one of these squads that you're going to expect to see in the playoffs. And this is, again, going back to the original point, the issue. You're losing to teams that you are expecting to play in the playoffs by big margins at home. You're beating the Clippers and you're beating Dallas, two good teams, don't get me wrong, but certainly not the cream of the crop. You're needing game-winning shots to win those at home. I mean, there's an issue of margins here. We talk about net rating all the time, particularly when it comes to the Warriors, because their net rating was so much better, and their plus-minus is so much better, and all of these things. It was in the margins where you would find their excellence. Those margins do not exist right now. And winning's a habit, and playing hard's a habit. And I know that they flipped the switch last year, but they also played 60 damn good basketball games before they went into that funk at the end of the season after Steph's injuries. Like, they were really, really good, and they turned it on way more often than they turned it on this year. They flipped it, but everyone was nervous going in. Are they going to flip the switch at any point? Are they going to go on a run here like they did at the beginning of the season and just say, we're here, we got it, we can turn it on whenever the hell we want, don't worry.
It's not promise.
It isn't promise.
It's not promise. I mean, in other years you could say that it is, even last year when they went on a 9-1 run.
Right.
But – I mean,
without Steph.
Without Steph. I mean, before we can even go to the run, can we just take baby steps? Can they just play a game, with 60% strength, like they give a damn? Like, that's something that they have to have before they can get on a run. They would have to, you know, care more than one half to win a game.
Like, they get back-to-back games here against the Blazers. One here, one away. Yeah. How about, like, a total margin of victory of 30 points in those two games.
Yeah, I mean, specifically Portland, that's what happened after that OKC game. You thought, oh, well, if they lost by double digits to OKC, you have Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. This is going to be a long night. And all of a sudden, the Warriors looked like the Warriors again. But the thing that leaves me kind of confused is there's so many things going in NBA season. There's certainly games where the effort's been in question. But I think by and large, it's more them not executing well, which I think is even a better, you know, larger concern than if they were bored, because that's kind of an easy thing to solve.
Okay, they have the Blazers in those back-to-back games, as we said. They get a game against the Suns, which, my God, if they lose that game against the Suns on New Year's Eve, then we will have to have an emergency Let's Freak Out podcast. And then on the 3rd, I mean, obviously we'll all talk before then, but the 3rd they have this game against the Rockets, which – a while back was another one that we circled on the calendar. Maybe not so much anymore, but I mean, this is the big thing. The Warriors are in the thick of everything, and Steve Kerr is saying, "Well, this is the norm." I agree with that sentiment. Hey, this is the norm. You got to fight for every win. The Western Conference is tough, and you know, nothing is given, and we're never going to win 73 again, and this and that. I disagree with the premise of it, though, because you have 4 All-Stars. And while, yes, you're a top-heavy team and maybe your bench isn't where you'd like it to be and all that stuff, you have 4 All-Stars. Expectations versus reality is everything in life. And while maybe the expectations for this Warriors season were a little bit too high, right? Some people were throwing around 74 out of just nonsense because they think, hey, they won 73 without Kevin Durant. What can they do with them? But 60 wins, let's just call it even 55. I mean, that should be a lock for this team with this kind of a talent. And they're not on pace to have the first seed or the second seed. They're looking like they're going to be fighting for home court advantage in the first round, not in the Western Conference Finals, in the first round. I'm having a hard time just putting blind faith that this team is going to flip the switch, because we have said before the season, we said time and time again, you never know when this thing is going to end. And it's not Boogie's fault. It's not, you know, it's not anyone's fault in particular, but there is a confluence of events happening here that I think we all have our ears up here. This might be you know, signs of the downslope. And for a team that, you know, frankly, remember, they down in the second half, back-to-back games, Western Conference Finals last year. Maybe there's not a good second competitor this year. Maybe it's the Lakers. Maybe it's somebody else. Maybe it's the Rockets again. Who the hell knows? But if this team's sliding, there's a lot of teams that are going to be amped up to take advantage.
Without a doubt. And the thing about this, as I was thinking about where they go from here, say there's a few games that suddenly Steph, Clay, and KD just make shots they normally make. Okay, great. That might give them a few wins. But I think where they go from here is finding how to be flexible with all the different scenarios that will get their shots going. Because it seems like initially they were always hung up on either, hey, let's do ball movement or do ISO. But it doesn't seem like there is an agreement within the team of how to adjust when the first scenario isn't falling.
Right.
And the priority, and this might sound like obvious, but the priority shouldn't be about, hey, how do we make sure that we have a reliable supporting cast when these guys are getting double teamed? Jarepko, Iguodala, McKinney, they're wild cards. They might hit shots, they might not. Like, you can't fret about that. The priority should be about what can be done to make sure that the All-Stars are being efficient no matter what is going on defensively, no matter what coverages they're getting. So if they're going double teams, they do a different philosophy, and it seems like that's kind of the thing that's been dragging them. They don't have a plan B, C, or D.
All right, Mark, that was a hot take, man.
It was.
I liked it. That was your final take. Logan, I want your final take here.
My final take is that they need to play very well against Portland. I don't know if they will, but...
Or what?
Or we're going to have this conversation again.
Oh, man, ooh. No one wants that. Least of all, the audience.
Exactly. But, I mean, I don't know. I think that the Warriors, we've said this time and time again, if they play 50% of what they're capable of, they're going to win most nights.
Yes.
They just need to give a damn. And we're going to see, I mean, they're going to practice tomorrow. We're going to see what happens in that. And this Portland game is going to be a barometer. We'll see how they go, and then we'll see how they have a date after this, and they have a date in Portland and they have a date in Phoenix. We'll see how they go from there. But, man, this was a very, very ugly game.
My final take is this, and I think that if we have a certain section of the rowdy Warriors Twitter listening, they're going to like this. I am a pretty ardent defender of Steve Kerr, but I am starting to wonder if his messages are getting through in that locker room. There is not an urgency to figuring it out, even with very important games coming up here because of this performance, how they respond, all that stuff, gut check time, whatever you want to call it. But part of the issue, no question, and we can argue about how much it plays into this, is motivation and urgency and the desire to play hard. And this team, for many good reasons, does not seem to have it. And I'm wondering if a different voice in the locker room might change that. I'm not advocating for anything. I'm not saying that it makes any sense. But I'm wondering it now, and it's the first time I've wondered it all season. And I think that that's a pretty big step here. Steve Kerr is a brilliant basketball coach. He placed the foundation here. But let's not forget that Steve Kerr was kind of in and out with this job because of his injuries, because of his surgery and the effects there. And there was a bit of chaos is not the right word, but you had Luke Walton, you had different voices, Mike Brown, and you were getting different voices. And let's not forget the Warriors, when they went on that massive run, which was the backbone of the 73 wins, Luke Walton was the coach of this team. Yeah. And when they went to the finals 2 years ago, Mike Brown was the coach of this team. And those different voices, for whatever it was, seemed to help. And I'm wondering Steve has been kind of preaching the same stuff now for two solid years. It's fantastic that he's been in place for a very long time. That was not something that was guaranteed a while back, but I'm starting to wonder if it's fallen on deaf ears.
Well, if nothing else, you're looking at the calendar here. There's a game against Phoenix. Maybe it's time for him to hand the clipboard over to some of the guys.
That is exactly. I think that is actually a
good
pretty
call,
astute.
Medina.
That is a good call. I mean, something's got to change up here because clearly we're sick of hearing it. I can't imagine how the players feel. All right, so no big deal. Just another loss in December. They don't matter. Portland game's coming up. Mark, plug something.
Well, what I was going to say, Dieter, is regardless of how this season's going, your voice will always be effective.
That was
to,
great.
To whom?
To me and the readers.
Okay. Well,
Bay Area News Group.
I greatly appreciate that, Mark, but we got to get out of here. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
For Logan Murdoch, Mark Medina. Logan, what do we say?
Tap in.